It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode number 34 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. Today's guest, Karen Ososki, has had a very diverse career with horses. Although she was raised in a rodeo family, she actually developed a passion for more of the English disciplines and got into dressage and jumping. That was after she spent a couple of summers working on ranches in Montana. She's a highly sought-after clinician and has traveled the world giving presentations on horse and rider biomechanics, which we'll definitely get into in the interview. And just last summer, she spent a considerable amount of time doing presentations in Africa, where, by the way, you can actually take a horseback safari and ride amongst the elephants and lions. Sounds amazing, but definitely not for the faint of heart. I think you're really going to enjoy this interview with Karen. She is super passionate about what she does and just loves to help people to improve their horsemanship. Without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Karen Ososki. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really glad that we could do this.
Well, I'm just really thrilled that you're so close, and two, that you're doing this and getting different things out to people in such a great way.
Yeah, well, I'm always looking for interesting people to connect with, and it's even better when they're like, right down the road from me. You have such a diverse experience with horses, both in English and in Western. But I didn't know until I read your bio that you also have sort of a history in rodeo as well.
Yeah. Yes, my family was did rodeo. And so I was growing up, I actually grew up behind the chutes is what we called it out there, when everybody was doing their thing. But I was kind of the black sheep of the family. So as I got older and I would be at all these different rodeos, and my mother rode grand entry, and my grandfather was a pickup man at the rodeos. That's why we would travel with the rodeos. I started becoming more interested in going over and watching the horse show part and the jumping. And even though they saw me maybe going down the barrel racing or doing different things, I actually sort of made this curve and sort of kept watching the jumping. And pretty soon I was asking my mom, do you think I could have a jumping horse? And she's like, why would you want one of those? And then pretty soon it was like, could I go to school? There's a school, it was a Powell Community College. At that time, I think it's called Northwest Community College. And it was like the first equine program in this area. And this was quite a few years ago, as you can imagine. And I said to my mom, I want a jumping horse so I can go down and learn jumping. And she was like, oh my, that's quite the change. But I must have cried enough, so they finally let me go. And then I kind of never looked back. I mean, I went and did the jumping. And then actually a few years I went and rode, chased cows, moved cows on quite a few big ranches. I did that for a couple of years. And then I got back into the jumping and went into eventing and into dressage. And the older you get, the less jumping you do and the more dressage you do. And so it has been quite the journey. But horses have always been part of our family's life. For generations, we've always been quite into horses. And growing up in Eastern Montana, that was just, part of our life.
Yeah. And was your family involved in ranching as well then?
No, not my immediate family, because they traveled so much. Mm. But I had many cousins who had large ranches and cattle ranches. So that's where I went and worked.
Yeah.
And did different things with them and would, haul cake in the winter, like 5 miles, the cows and stuff like that. And we would pack in horses and stuff. It was great. It was great fun.
That's really unique for someone to have such a, so much experience doing all these different things with horses in both Western and English disciplines and working with cattle and jumping. I mean, that's really neat.
It was really great. And the main part of that is I have quite a few years. When you have all those years behind you, you could have dabbled in quite a few different things, and it just depends on where your path is taking you. And my path is taking me, all the way to competing at dressage and then getting into natural horsemanship and coming sort of back into the Western world and now getting back into Western dressage and making sort of a full loop of the circle. So it's been actually quite a fun journey.
Yeah, I bet. And there's so many things I want to talk to you about. But since you mentioned Western dressage, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, they do have a program where you can go and you they call it a certificate of completion. I'm not a certified instructor. They don't have that, but they call it a certificate of instruction. So you go and you take all these classes, and you learn a lot about how Western dressage sort of differs from classical dressage. And the most wonderful thing that happened, and wasn't something I was expecting, is that Western dressage is literally following classical dressage. It's just that they have a few different gates. So we would not have a slow jog in classical dressage, where they would have a different gait for that. We would not have we would call it a canter, and then their lope, you know, they would have a slower lope and things like that. So the gait tempos were a little different, and maybe some of the terms were different. But the whole concept of riding the horse from back to front, of riding the horse up into the hand, of having a healthy posture and a top line for the horse was all exactly just came straight out of classical dressage. So when I went and took those classes, it was like, oh, this is something I'm very familiar with, something I've really studied over many years. And now I just incorporate it into the different gaits that are brought into with the Western dressage. It's just like I said, they'll have the slower jog trot and a few things like that. But it was really a great experience. I think that Western dressage is really going to catch on nationwide. Cowboy dressage is the same type of thing. It's a little different maybe than Western dressage. It's a place where the barrel racers and, because I came from eventing and jumping, and pretty soon you're riding dressage, and then the barrel racers and the reiners and the cutters and everything, pretty soon they're going to get a few more years, and they just sort of slow down, and they just want to have you go out and have fun and just be with their horses and set, yet still be involved in being able to go to shows and different things. So because of the dynamics of just, the way the population is, and a lot of women ride their horses, and a lot of women in an older age range ride their horses, I think you'll see quite a bit of Western dressage coming into the U.S.
That's interesting. So what do you primarily do in your business now? Do you give a lot of riding lessons, or do you train outside horses, or how does that look for you?
Okay. So I give lots of lessons. I mean, I'm really more of a riding instructor. Mm-hmm. I don't really train horses anymore. Again, because when you're a trainer, they bring you the problem horses, right? You're the trainer. You're supposed to help with the problem horses. So as you get older, pretty soon you just realize that there are younger people and, that are better able to bring along some of the problem horses. So I don't really do as much training. I do a lot of individual lessons. I do a lot of clinics nationally. I now do international clinics. Last year, I spent 6 weeks in 3 different countries in Africa doing 14 different clinics. I also do a lot of expos, like I did the Nile, the Northern, what was it? Nile,
Northern International Livestock Exposition.
And the Ohio Equine Affair and different things like that. They asked me to come in. I do a lot of presentations at like the PATH International Convention or something like that. They'll ask me to come in and either do lectures or demonstrations. I do lots of biomechanics, which I think we might get into a little bit about today, about how riders move and how they need to connect with the horse's movement and how horses move. That's biomechanics. I also do a lot on groundwork, because I've developed my own sort of refined groundwork program for the gentle horse. It's not so much about colt starting. It's to take your groundwork to the next level and to bring in classical principles of dressage and biomechanics into that. I do a lot of that. I do a lot of magazine articles on that. And then I also do unmounted exercises and fitness programs for riders. It's I do quite a few things.
Yeah.
And I'm writing a book. We just do it all, So, and I've just been following the path. It's like, this will open up and I get asked to do this. I say, oh, okay, I'll do that. And I think anybody who knows to be in the horse world, you have to wear many hats. It's very hard, just to wear one hat and just maybe do lessons. My husband might be happier if I just stayed home and did lessons or something. But you wear many hats just trying to, make ends meet and things like that. You just really have to work and figure out all the different ways to make it work. So I really enjoy teaching. I mean, teaching is my thing, and I love to teach. I love horses. And so every day I get up, I'm very fortunate that I get to go out and do what I love.
Yeah, there's lots of people who can't say that. So I'm really interested to learn more about your sort of unique specialties. There are lots of trainers, there's lots of horse professionals that give lessons and do different things, but you have really specialized in, like you mentioned, the biomechanics. Also, I think I read on your website about Ride Right.
Yes.
And some of those things. And so I would love to just hear more about that, because I think we don't always think about what we can do to improve our physicality and different things to make us better riders.
Okay, so I had been an instructor and certified and taught for years and years, and obviously I've done all these things, you know. And about, now it's about 8 years ago or something, all of a sudden you started hearing this word biomechanics. And first it was about equine biomechanics, and then all of a sudden it was rider biomechanics. And I thought, oh, what is this, you know? I had studied equine anatomy when I was in school, and so I knew anatomy, but it was like, what do they mean, biomechanics? And why is this so important? And why is this now such a big buzzword? And why is everybody so excited about it? And we had, fortunate enough to where I was, we had brought a German fellow over. He was equine biomechanics, so this is about how the horse moves. And he did this lecture, and I felt like a whole new world opened up to me. And I also felt like, wow, I had a huge piece missing in all of my teaching and in all my understanding of all the things that I've been teaching. I could tell you the how and the when to do just about anything. Obviously, you know, jumping, groundwork, whatever. I could tell you the how and the when, but I couldn't have told you the why. And so here, even though I had all these certifications, had done all this stuff, taken all these classes, I couldn't tell you the why until I really got into the biomechanics. And when I started understanding the why your pelvis needs to be in a certain position, why the horse's natural top line needs to be curved and round, why, not just how to do it or when to do it or you should do it or this is what the trainers say, then I had a whole new world and a whole new way of teaching that was much more holistic. It gave the person a much better rounded understanding of what they were trying to achieve. And once they got to this piece of the understanding, things just started to click. I mean, I have aha moments, and people are like, oh, I've heard that my whole life and I didn't get it. But right. All you did was tell me why and how it works. And I put those two together, and all of a sudden, now I understand why. It's an easy example. This is more about horses than people, but it's something that everybody hears. The horse should not go behind the vertical with his head. He should not, you know, he should keep the forehead of his head sort of straight up and down. If he goes and gets too curved under, I know people can't see this, but it gets too curved under, then you always hear, oh, a horse should never do that. But I didn't know why. I didn't know that there were two bones that actually hit from the skull of the horse's skull into his neck bones, that when he gets too curled under, they actually are hit, and you actually can't ask for lateral flexion. He actually gets stuck. So all of a sudden, if you know that two bones are hitting and you can't ask your horse to do that, and you tell that to your student, that goes a lot deeper and a lot quicker than having you say your horse shouldn't go behind the vertical, because they say, oh, maybe it doesn't look good, or maybe she's just saying that, or, you know. But if they have the reason why, all of a sudden, it was like a whole new level of understanding. And that just rippled through all of my training. It rippled through all of my lessons. And I really felt that when people have this other piece, they really had a better understanding of why they were doing something. And it really helped their riding.
Yeah, I bet. So what are some of the other things that most of us wouldn't necessarily know but affect our riding on a regular basis?
Okay, so When we go, and we'll just concentrate now on the rider and rider movement. So when we talk about rider biomechanics, really what we're talking about is how to get the human body's movement to connect to the horse's movement. Because we all know, we've all experienced it, that when we're out of sync with the horse's movement, we get the bouncing, we're jostled all over. It's not smooth. It's not comfortable. We're really not comfortable riding that way. But there's two main ways that you can ride. You can either ride through strength and by gripping, by holding on with your legs or holding onto the reins, and that's how you're balancing and staying on your horse. And you feel that that makes you more secure. But in the end, actually, you're less secure because you're so tense and tight that any movement of the horse, you can't go and smoothly move with the horse. You kind of get just bounced off the horse. The other type of riding is through balance. And balance, though, means that you have to really be secure in your core, in the trunk of your body. And that when the horse moves, it's kind of like if you were on a roller coaster and going around, you know, the sharp turns or in a fast car or something, you can hold on to the side and sort of hold yourself there. But if you can't do that with your horse, because your horse really doesn't like it if you try to hold on to the reins that tight and that hard to stay on. But if you just then sort of got strong in your core, down in your stomach muscles and your back muscles, and you stayed balanced around that curve by bringing those muscles into play, then you can stay balanced without having to hold on, and you can move with the horse. So if you learn to ride from balance by a strong core, that also opens up your legs and your arms so that they can work independently. You're not trying to grip and hold on. So when you go to ask for the aids for your riding, like you want your horse to go faster, well, if you have relaxed legs because you're holding balanced from your core, then if you ask with your legs with a little squeeze or something, he feels that and he says, oh, I guess we should go faster. If all the time, though, you're holding on really tight with your legs to hold on, he doesn't know the difference. And usually then the horse just goes faster and faster and we get more afraid. And so we hold on tighter and tighter. And he says, sure, I'll go faster and faster. But when you become very secure and balanced in your core, then you can have relaxed legs, you can have relaxed arms, you can have relaxed breathing. You can sort of melt down into your horse's back. So you're not like perched tight up on top of the back being stiff. And once you can melt down into your horse and relax, especially through the pelvis, and let your pelvis sort of just get moved by the horse's back moves the pelvis back and forth, and you just let that, allow that to happen, then you're connected to the horse's movement. Then when the horses move, you don't get into the banging like when you're trying to do the trot and different things. So the first thing is for people to realize that they may feel secure more by hanging on, but they're actually less secure. It's much easier to come off a horse when you're tense and tight than to be relaxed and being able to learn to move through the horse's movement. Of course, this takes some practice because there's many things that come into play. First, you have to be relaxed mentally and physically. And to get mentally relaxed, you shouldn't be afraid. So you have to first start out in a situation where either you're on a lunge line with an instructor or you're in a secure arena or something on a very safe horse. So you don't have to worry about the horse. All you have to do is think about yourself. And you can become relaxed and you can just feel the horse move underneath you and you can just sort of melt around and come into that. The second thing is the breathing. When we get afraid or something, we start really breathing up in our chest. So that makes our chest tight. Again, that brings our center of gravity up higher. And if we just learn to just breathe all the way down into our abdomen, it relaxes us. It keeps us more grounded, more centered on our horses. But the other thing that really helps our horses is that they can feel any tension or tightness, whether it's mental or physical tension in the rider. And that brings up fear in the horse. The horse gets quite afraid. So if we really want the horse to be mellow, first we need to be mellow and relaxed. And then if we can just keep our breathing, that will help us stay relaxed and help us stay more grounded down into our horse. So then when you have these sort of what I call the basic foundation building blocks, a couple of pieces like that, that you're riding from your core through strength, that your arms are independent, and that your breathing is relaxed, then you can move on and stay connected to your horse's movement. So that's just a place to start. It sounds like a lot. There's a lot of things that come into that. To really be if you want to move on with your riding, I mean, that's plenty enough to get you to be able to go and do a trail ride. That would be enough for you to go to a guest ranch and take a week and, you know, go for a ride just so you stay relaxed. And then they can give you a few other tips. If they want to go a little faster, they'll help you a little bit. But if you really want to improve your riding, if you really want to go like to the next level, there's some criteria for the rider that are very important. First, there's fitness. Okay, so then we talked about core stabilization. So it's important to be fit in your core. And we also, at this time in the United States, we need to also talk about the level of fitness in terms of weight. One of the things that they're really realizing on the guest ranches and different ranches is that they're having to bring in larger horses, Percherons, draft horses, because of the weight issue with their riders. And a lot of people were asking, were not underneath the weight limit, so they were not being able to ride, which was very sad because they wanted to come on this wonderful trip. They wanted to ride the horses, so they're just getting bigger horses. So weight issue is a problem just in terms of the horse carrying the rider. And also because if you're not fit, and you don't have to be really, really fit, but just within reason, you know, normal fitness, it's very hard for you, again, to melt down around the horse and stuff like that. So it creates a little more instability. So that's been one of the biggest thing all around the country that people are really talking about and researching is the weight issue with riders, because it's become a new issue. I just thought I should mention that since it's a new thing. So you have fitness. And then we talked about balance, of course, is very important. And it's not just about being able to balance with your core, but just for you to feel what is balance. How do you find balance? And so one of the things you can do is just like start standing on one leg and see if you're naturally balanced or if you struggle with balance. And you can just improve your balance by doing things like standing on one leg. So balance is very important. Alignment. A lot of people might want to ride really hunched over or really leaning back. Mm-hmm. The best way to stay in connection with your horse's movement is to be in alignment where you're ears go over your shoulders go over your hips. You're sort of in a long, straight line. So you have a nice alignment. That means you're not as tippy and you don't go as much side to side. So that alignment's important. Weight distribution is another thing that most people don't think about. But if we really lean over to the left, say when we watch TV or we drive or something, we sort of like to lean one way. Well, if you lean one way on your horse, one, that makes you more unstable. And also that also affects your horse because your horse's balance gets really affected by how you have weight distribution over your horse. Flexibility. If we have not done our yoga, if we have watched a lot of TV and not done our yoga, then it's going to be pretty hard. And horses can be fairly wide. And flexibility is important. So you can be able to move with the horse's movement. If you're stiff and really tight, you know, a little yoga really comes into play and is very helpful. Different things like stamina just aerobic cardio conditioning. It's very fun because I have headsets for my students because my voice, well, usually I talk 8 hours a day and I start to lose my voice, that I can hear their breathing, which is pretty funny. So they start trotting or something or cantering or loping or something. And I say, oh, you know, they're like, and I say, maybe you need to get to the gym a little bit, maybe do a little cardio, because most people think that riding is not cardio. There's a lot of cardio because you're trying to do all this balancing and things. It really takes some effort. Then, you know, you can get into different things like your emotions. Now, we talked a little bit about the fear emotion, but horses pick up on emotions just like that, you know. So we really have to come to our horses sort of in the moment and sort of paying attention. We can't be, you know, upset because we have to leave and go do something or something happened that day. When we come to ride, we sort of have to just get our minds around our horses and be in the moment. It makes us much safer. If we're really thinking about other things and not really present, then if a horse shies or something, we're not really with the horse. You know, the horse starts to shy. We haven't been paying attention. We've been worried about what we had to do later that day. There's a safety issue. So there's quite a few criteria that can go into riding. And sometimes they think, oh, people say, oh, that's just too much. But most of it's pretty easy and common sense kind of things. You know, if you feel that you're not maybe in the shape you need to be, for you just start walking or something like that. If you really want to get intense, like when I was competing at dressage, I worked out 2 hours a day and rode every day. Oh. I mean, and I did yoga, I did weightlifting, I did cardio, I did dancing, I did, you know, treadmill. I had this huge, you know, this whole fitness, everything that I did. It took me about 2 hours a day because I did a lot of cross training. I just didn't do one thing because I really wanted to be balanced and really have dexterity and, you know, all the things that I needed, all those things, those criteria. I did lots of different things. So if you really want to compete and really want to be connected with your horse's movement, because when you really start competing, you really need to be able to, especially dressage or something like that, you need to move to the horse's movement. You really need to be fit at a different level. But if you just wanted, you know, just go out and on the weekends and just do a trail ride or something like that, then, you know, you just start walking during the week, or, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, you just stand on one foot, or, you know, there's lots of little things that we can do, even though it seems like it's a lot, that we can incorporate into our lives every day that just, you know, can help our riding. It's not like this huge thing like, oh, you know, I barely have time to ride. How am I going to have time to work out? How am I going to have time to do this? How, you know, I just can't. But if you just become more aware of everything you're doing during the day, if you like to sit on one hip, then, you know, at your computer, maybe you just start sitting evenly on both seat bones, things like that. You just start becoming more aware, and all of those things can help so much in your riding.
Yeah. Wow. That was a lot.
Sorry.
No, that was great information. I mean, I was just, you know, listening to you talking about core strength and how important it is to be able to move with your horse. And, you know, I grew up riding and showing cutting horses, and my dad is a trainer. And I tell you what, if you don't learn how to do that, you are not going to get very far riding cutting horses. So I'm fortunate, I guess, that, you know, that was sort of my introduction to riding. I had to figure out the core strength part and moving with your horse. I mean, if you don't, you have to be relaxed, and you have to be sitting on your pockets. And if you're not, you're not going to make it too far working a cow on a good horse. So, yeah. So that's really interesting, because I often find when I'm helping like the kids with their riding and stuff, it's hard for me to explain why it's so important that they relax and relax their knees and let their legs hang and just, mm-hmm. you know, because it went, once they get tense, it's like everything speeds up and they're out of control and, you know, not really. I mean, they're on safe horses, but course, just,
right. yes.
It's just not the ideal situation. So that's really interesting. And I think probably a lot of people struggle with that, especially if they didn't grow up showing cutting horses like I did. Cause you don't, it's not like as important, you know, you can kind of get by.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. So that's really interesting and hugely helpful to people that are struggling with, really, not getting off their horse and feeling like they just ran a marathon or something. Cause it's so much more work when you're constantly gripping and tight and you're, it's no fun for your horse or you.
Mm-hmm. So very well said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very well said. And I must say the most fun I probably have ever had has been on the back of a cutting horse. When you, if everyone could just sit on the back of a really good cutting horse just once and experience that, it is, it's a wonder and a joy. So you were very fortunate because it's one of my favorite experiences I've ever had. But you're right. You know, if you're trying to hold on, there's no way you can stay with that movement. It's so quick. Right. And you have got to stay over your center of gravity and you've got to stay with that horse. But it's really that's really a fun thing to be able to do. So
it is. It's great. Awesome. And, you know, starting when I was 10 years old, I didn't understand the biomechanics of what I was doing. I just knew that that's, you know, what my dad told me to do. So I better do it.
Yes.
And it was a lot more enjoyable when, you know, you did stay loose and move with your horse for sure.
Yes. Yes. And that's what a lot of people just need to realize is that, and just, of course, it depends on what a person's goals are.
Right.
You know, like I said, if they just want to go out and just be safe and go for a nice walk on the weekends or something, that's wonderful. I mean, wonderful way to spend your Saturday. But if you really do want to become either follow a discipline or do more riding in a more challenging area, I didn't do it, but you know, in Africa, they have horseback riding experiences where you do safaris and you go out with the elephants and things like that. If you want to be able to do something like that, which would be great, it's really great that you have this idea of relaxation and staying and connected with the horse. There's lots of things that you can do. And the key is that you just start with small things and then you can just work your way up, or you can, you know, read, there's different books to read. Like you had mentioned Daniel Stewart with Ride Right. He has some really good books out. He's used to be a United States equestrian team coach, and he did a lot of the, Olympic riders and we get them fit for different things. And, he has some different books out there, different books that can tell you, just help you with in terms of how to use fitness and get your balance and things like that. When we do the cross training, one of the things that it's important to also realize is that the exercises should be what we call sort of specific to the discipline. So riding. So we're going to talk about riding. So if you're a tennis player, you want to go out and you probably want to run sprints back and forth. Or you want to be able to, you know, to do things really quickly back and forth. That's not really something a rider needs to do. What a rider needs, he needs more about balance. So you can get yourself a balance board. A rider needs to do more core exercises. So you can do some Pilates. A rider needs to do more yoga because you really have to be flexible. So when you are thinking about all the little different things that you can do, it's also important to remember that you want to do things that actually are going to help your riding, if that's your goal and what you're looking at. And not to do, you know, not to spend so much time weightlifting with our arms, because hopefully we don't really need strong arms to ride our horses, right? this is the goal, is to not ride our horses with strong arms. So yes, you want to do some weightlifting because it's good for your cardio, it's good for your overall muscle balance. But you probably don't want to spend a ton of time in the gym doing a lot of weightlifting, because it can create a lot of inflexibility and you want to stay flexible and things like that. So if you did a lot of weightlifting, then you'd have to make sure that you went and did a lot of yoga so you can keep your range of motion of all your different joints and things like that. So it's just a matter of just common sense and looking through some of the literature. But again, the more you understand, I guess the one thing I should mention that is probably the most important part of your body in terms of connecting your body to the horse's movement is really your pelvic area, your pelvis. And for a lot of us, we are for to get our pelvis to move, like if you think of somebody doing a hula hoop, can you sort of visualize a hula hoop where your core stays one piece and your hips move, right? You're sort of the hip movement. That is kind of how you would like to think about riding a horse. But in our society, to have open and loose hip flexors is really what they're called, the different muscles around our hips. Because we sit a lot. We sit at computers, we sit at our desks, we sit at our TVs, we sit in our cars, we sleep maybe, you know, in a fetal position, and like our legs are really most of the day are at like a 90-degree angle, right, to our core. And yet when we're going to go to ride our horses, we need to be able to spread our legs really out far, to come around that barrel, and to let them really be able to hang down. So one of the key areas that people can think about the most, besides the core area of just getting strong in their core, is to open up and be able to have that those hips really open, the joints around the hips really open, so that you can stay in connection with your horse, the movement. To do that, you can do this. There's quite a bit of yoga. That's where, again, where the yoga would come into play. And to do it, most of these things, when you're first learning, I would highly suggest you either get a book or a DVD or a trainer, you know, go to a class, because it's very important when we start to do different exercises that we're really doing them correctly. Because if we do the exercise incorrectly, we're really not getting the benefit from that exercise that we're really looking for. And we really don't want to get injured. So some of these things, you know, like you really don't want to go start doing yoga and think that, well, I haven't touched my toes in 10 years, but today I'm going to touch my toes. Well, maybe you won't, you know, be able to walk for a couple of days after that. Yeah. You want to go into everything slowly. You want to go into it with some knowledge. You want to go into it with some safety precautions, with some guidance. And you can get that like guidance. Like I said, you know, this internet, there's all sorts of places where you can look that are inexpensive for you to get some help. But it's best to think about, well, okay, so I've read this book and the book says I need to be open to my hips to be able to follow my horse's movement. How do I open up my hips in a safe way that will benefit my riding? So the two most important things I think for a rider to think about is core strength, because that's where your balance comes from. And then that you have an open pelvis area so you can follow the horse's movement.
Yeah. And that's something that, women struggle with, right? As far as the pelvis, because most women have a pelvis that tips back. And normally when you're riding, you want to tip your pelvis the other way and kind of stay underneath you, you know, sit on your pockets.
But now, because of rider biomechanics, I mean, I grew up in a Western family, so I understand what sitting on the pockets means. But actually, there are three places where the pelvis can be, and you are absolutely correct. 99% of most people that I teach, they have their pelvis tipped forward. And it's tipped forward, so the top of the pelvis is tipped forward. And that is because they're tight right there in front of where their legs bent, right? Right there, they're tight there, so that pulls the pelvis forward. And then you can also have the other part, like you said, sitting more back on the pockets. But if you sit in either of those two sort of extended positions, either too far forward or too far backwards, you're actually limiting the range of motion of the hip joint. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the best place actually to be is straight up and down, not too far back on the pockets and not tip too far forward, but just as straight up and down. So when you're riding, the seam on your jeans, you know, right there, that would be going down each side of between your hip bone and your waist. If that can just be straight up and down, that's actually probably the best, and gives you the most mobility to be able to follow the horse's movement. Now, to be on the pockets again, there are specialty times when you do want to tip your pelvis back. But again, this is kind of like when you're gripping the horse with the legs. If you always grip the horse with the legs, then gripping with the legs doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't mean go. It doesn't mean anything. If you're always on your pockets, then when you would really like to tip your pelvis back, like say for cutting or say for something else, in a specific time for a specific thing, then you've lost that because the horse doesn't understand, oh, she tipped her pelvis back. Well, what does that mean? So, it just depends what you're doing and where you want to be. But there's probably isn't a, one time fits all, but most of the time we just would like it to be in a neutral position because that gives us the greatest range of motion for that joint. Mm-hmm. And then the greatest motion that you have, really helps you stay connected to the horse's movement because the horse's pelvis, when I teach my riders, I used to teach back to back. Okay, you have your back and the horse's back. But now I've switched that up. I've evolved. Maybe I'm evolving. I don't know. And now I say, I want you to think of that. Your pelvis is being moved by the horse's pelvis's movement. It's pelvis to pelvis. And all of a sudden, when you think of that, you can sort of think about the hind legs and how they're pushing forward and how that pelvis is moving and how that pelvis is moving your pelvis. Then you can really stay connected. And my the students that I have say that image really did help them over the back-to-back connection, the pelvis-to-pelvis connection, because then they really started feeling like the horse is pushing from the hind end, pushes up your hip, and you're just allowing your hip to go forward wherever the horse pushes it. So, you know, it's just a matter of just refining it down and when to use something and when, you know, when it's appropriate to use some things and not other things. Yeah. So I think it's great fun. I just say, well, we can do this. Oh, look, you know, just by moving 2 inches, look at how that changed the horse and how happy he is. And, you know, and so to some people, they probably think, oh my, it's just too much information, like you say. But if you just realize there's a few little blocks to the foundation, and the main blocks are you have balance and the core strength and the independent use of your limbs and relaxation and breathing, you're really about 90% of the way home. And then the other things are just the icing on the cake. They just help you become a better rider. They help you become a more refined rider. And, you know, the more refined that you get, then the better communication and connection you have with the horse. But it's just not to worry about, oh, this is so much information. And it's just to take a little bit here and a little bit there, try it out and say, oh, I got it. Okay, that feels better. And then take another little piece and say, oh, okay, now I've got that. Now I can move on. So break it down into little small pieces that are doable. I think the other thing, having been an instructor for all these years, that maybe it's just because of our society, because we're so great at becoming overachievers. Most of my students are great overachievers. Yeah. So if I tell them to do one thing, oh, they're going to do it 10 times even more, because 10 times more is greater. Sometimes then they overdo instead of just relaxing and doing small parts. The other thing is I think that we can get very judgmental about ourselves, and we can have great expectations. If we have our expectations so high that, oh, I've taken 3 riding lessons, now I should be able to ride, those expectations are probably going to set you up maybe for some disappointment. Riding takes a long time. They now say it takes like 10,000 tries for a person to become proficient at one of the things they're doing in a sport. Say, like, if you were a tennis player, it maybe take you 10,000 backhands. You have to practice that many times before you have to become part of the flow and part of it. So if we have expectations that are long, saying, oh, I get 10,000 tries and I've only done this 10 times, I got a lot of time left, we can be a lot kinder and easier on ourselves. And also, that's also about the judgment. It's like, oh, you know, my friend, she's been riding every day for a month, and look, she rides a whole lot better than me, but I've only been on the horse, you know, 3 times, and look at how, you know, then all of a sudden we get into judging ourselves and or worrying about what people think and things like that. I think those have been the biggest stumbling blocks for my riders to go forward. And what I like to do with my riders is say, look, this is our fun time. This is our passion. We're going to come out, we're going to play, we're going to have fun, we're going to try a little of this, try a little of that. And when we make a mistake, instead of saying, oh no, I made a mistake, we're going to say, yeah, I finally made that mistake. I can cross it off the list. Yay. One more mistake off the list. Thank you. That was a great thing. Now I don't have to worry about that one. So if we just take our minds that it's going to take a long time to really get proficient. I mean, if you really want to become a professional, it takes a long time. It takes a ton of practice. You have to do it again and again. And we break it down into little tiny sections, because you can feel really good about yourself if you go out and all you wanted to be able to do is maybe ride without, you know, if you're on the lunge line with your arms out at the side. Now, if that's your goal, and after 10 times you can do that, you can say, yeah, I did that. But if your goal is to become an Olympic rider in 6 months, then we can put too much pressure on ourselves. We can have too much disappointment. So I just tell people, don't worry so much about all the details. I mean, I sort of pepper them in here and there, and, you know, just so they get a little more, so they have a little better understanding, a little more pieces to the jigsaw puzzle. We'll put another piece in and another piece in. But if we just get the foundation and get people happy, secure, safe, not afraid, those are big ones, a good foundation, then everything else is just cream and we just get to enjoy it. So that's kind of my philosophy, how I try to approach it, having done it for years, because I know that one of the biggest stumbling blocks for people is they have too much judgment and expectation. They get too hard on themselves. And we should be having fun, because this is our passion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I just talked to Barbara Schulte recently, uh-huh. and we talked about a lot of the same things, you know, and about how she found with her clients that their biggest stumbling block was worrying about what other people thought all the time, and what worrying about other people judging them. And, you know, I don't know how much of that comes from just you sort of creating that dialogue in your own head, or if people really are, you know, saying things to you. I don't, I don't know how much of that is just complete fabrication or if it's actually happening, but it's a big concern for people. And that comparison, you know, we all have that tendency in every part of our life, you know, to, well, that person has a better career than me, or that person's making more money than I am. And, you know, why am I not at that level? And we forget that everyone started at the same place, you know, and some of us may progress at different rates because we're putting more time into it or whatever, but we all started at the same place. And that person that you think you want to emulate, you know, they started in the same place you did at one time.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think you're absolutely right, because I've done quite a bit of competition and I have seen more riders go in more worried about what their friends were thinking or people in the stands were thinking, that it takes so much of their energy and their worry that they're not present with what's happening with their horses. And if they can sort of let that go, which is hard, I'm not saying this is an easy thing, because like you say, we've all grown up with it. We all tend to do it. But if we can just concentrate on what we're doing with our horse and just get one with that movement and going on more inside, instead of being so worried about the outside of what's happening around us, we have to think a little bit in terms of safety on the outside, but everything else should just be what we feel inside, feel with our horses, connect with our horses. Then we can let some of that judgment go. But I, especially when you get into competition, it has been I would have to agree with her 100%. It is one of the biggest things that, I've dealt with people. And I actually have started doing retreats. So with mindfulness and awareness, just for people to let go of expectation, mm-hmm. let go of the judgment, just try to just be there with their horse at that moment. What does that feel like? Not worrying. Like, I've been in many, many big barns, and there's usually a lot of people that line up on the side on the rail, and there's a lot of whispering that goes on. And you know, that it's a sad thing to say, but it's reality. And so I think that's another thing that feeds into our insecurities. And we just need to just say, what's important is I am here. I am on my horse. I'm a lucky person to have my horse. Here I am. Today, I'm just going to practice this. I haven't done it 10,000 times, so I've got a lot of chances. You know, I got a lot more times to perfect this and get it down to the way I want to go. And actually, I think I'll back up. Perfection doesn't exist. So I try not to use that word. Just sort of slipped out there. You know, but I catch myself if I let that word slip out, being a perfectionist for most of my life, and then realizing that level of perfectionism was actually limiting my ability to move forward, because I couldn't be perfect. So therefore I had this judgment and I had this worry and this expectation, and just think that I could be good or I could be excellent, but not perfect, because it doesn't exist. And all of a sudden it's another layer that you can take off in terms of worry or how you approach yourself and things like that. If you can just say, good is good. Oh, God, I am a good rider. I used mm-hmm. to say to myself, you know, when I was doing things, it's like, you know, if you took all the population of the whole world, I'm actually a pretty good rider, because most people don't even know how to ride in the whole world, you know, and then of all the riders, well, I can even do this. So actually, I'm pretty good. And got away from trying to, especially when I was competing, trying to get away from always that it was about the ribbon. It wasn't about the ribbon. It was about the journey. And it was about the only thing the ribbon would say, or the scores, like when you do dressage, would say, is how I was progressing in my training. And it was a personal thing, and it was a one-on-one thing, and it wasn't so much about the competition. Now, I think competition can be healthy as long as you can keep it to where it's still joyful and full of passion and positive, then go for it. But if you start to feel that you're losing that, because you're starting to worry more about the expectation and the worry and the judgment and the competition and, oh, you know, I got second and I did this wrong and I did that wrong, that will actually probably limit you more from going forward, than almost anything else.
Yeah.
So, but it's a journey. But yeah, we should have, you know, we have to have fun on this journey.
Absolutely. That's the main thing. Yeah. If we're not having fun, then we're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And our horses pick up on all that.
Yes.
And they don't understand, you know, that you're worried about this or that, or they just think something, you know, is either there's a lion in the corner or something, because, you know, my leader up here on my back is quite stressed and upset. So there must be something. And so it really affects our, and that's another thing that can really affect your scores and how you perform, is just your mental attitude, because your horse doesn't understand what it's all about. But the sports psychology, and then Daniel Stewart also does the sports psychology, and I've worked with him a lot on that. So it does play into riding. And usually when you're working with people who are just beginning, it's the fear factor. And if you can get them past the fear factor because you've given them a really safe place to start and a lot of tools in their basket so they feel they know what to do if something happens. I think that's another thing. Like a common thing, you know, Western writers is disengage the haunches. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's some people say it's a run, rein, stop or how you do it. Mm-hmm. But if you give somebody a tool that can always stop their horse in almost every situation, then pretty soon that fear goes away. It's like, oh, no matter what happens, I know I can stop him. All of a sudden, then they can think about other things because mm-hmm. they have that tool. And the more tools you put in the basket, I think really helps give them the security that they need to take away a lot of the fear. Because a lot of the women I teach are older. Because now they're empty nesters. They finally can afford to have the horse of their dreams. And yet now they have the fear factor because physically they're maybe not as able as they would have been in their 20s or their 30s. So there's a lot of different things that can bring in fear. But I feel that what's been most helpful when I've taught is the more things I can put that they can use, tools that they have to make them feel safe. Then we can move on to other things quicker. So I think that safety is a big issue too in fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, this has been awesome. I'm so glad that you could come on today. I mean, I've learned a lot, so I appreciate that.
That's great. Yes.
If people want to find out more about you, where is the best place to send them?
Website. And actually, I have a new website that's supposed to be up any day, so I hope so. So it's Karen Ososki, O-S-O-S-K-I, Refined Performance Horsemanship. So I have a website. I also have quite a resume on LinkedIn. That's another one. Facebook. I have a Facebook page, Refined Performance Horsemanship Facebook. And those are probably the easiest ones, you know, to think. And then, of course, like I send out, if you want to become part of my blog, then I send out when I'm going to be at a different expo or if I'm going to, I'm going to go down to Tennessee and do a bunch of clinics or something like that. Then I send out to those people in that area that I'll be visiting their area and coming through and doing that. So a lot of traveling, but it's all been really fun. And then if I do expos, that's another thing. Well, not the expos, but I should say the conferences. I do a lot of conferences. So then I can contact those people. If people want to sign up on my Facebook page or on my blog, then I can keep them in connection.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, all this information that you shared today is really helpful. And I think especially for new writers, you know, wanting to improve, it's great. And I know for me, I've been writing my whole life, but the physical fitness part of it, you know, obviously there's been times when I've been more fit than others in my life. True. And, you know, I'm not writing as much as I would like to right now because I have so many other commitments, but I have been working out. And so when I do ride, it is so much more enjoyable the next day because I'm not as sore as I would be if I weren't, you know, in shape. And I think especially for people who maybe are just going to go to a dude ranch and ride for a week or something and they aren't regular riders, or maybe they have a horse, but they're just trail riding on the weekends or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not only going to improve your riding while you're on the horse, but it's going to make it a lot more enjoyable for you when you get off and you're not going to be so sore too.
Yeah. And that's, it's important, especially because, you know, a lot of times it's the husband, right? So the wife wants to go ride at this fancy ranch or something. She brings her husband along, you know, and she wants to go again. But if he gets too sore and upset, he's like, I don't want to do that again. So it really does, you know, and that's a great way to just have a little trip sort of get together, you know. Oh, we can go to the gym together. We can get in shape. We're going to go riding. I did know a couple. They actually did an end-to-end ride thing in France, which sounded unbelievably wonderful. You know, wouldn't that just be fabulous?
It would.
She took him to the gym like every week, and then she gave him riding lessons for like 3 months. She said, so when we do this, you're going to have fun because I want to be able to do this again. Yeah. So you're so right. Yeah. Yes. So it's a family affair. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Good preparation.
Good preparation. You're absolutely right. Yes. Good, good.
Well, before we wrap up today, Karen, I just have one final question for you, and it's the same one I ask on every single episode of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. And that is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy or horseman to have?
Mindfulness and awareness. And then, of course, then that branches out. But if you're mindful and aware and in the present moment and really coming from inside, then you're going to be able to understand your horse when your horse gives a reaction or something like that. If you come that you're just here and there's no connection and you're just going to do what you're going to do and the horse is just going to do it, then I think that you're missing out on a wonderful piece of a partnership. And for me, it's really about partnership and empathy and compassion and becoming a soulful, positive leader for my horse, not maybe so much of a leader that just demands something, but a leader that asks in a way that my horse says, you bet. Mm-hmm. You, how fast you want to go? You tell me and we will go together. And so, but to start that journey, I think it really takes a lot more about what's inside of us and just becoming mindful and aware of how we approach our horses, how we are with the horses, what our horses are trying to tell us, and go from that place of just empathy, compassion, and partnership. I think that's because everything else builds on that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great answer. And all of those things are so applicable in every part of our lives as well, not just with horses, but we can all do better with that.
That's my journey. My journey is to connect with the horses, you know, in a way that it's an equal partnership. I might be, you know, I'm the leader because someone has to be the leader, but it's joint and we're going on this journey together. And my horses have, the more I've gone down this way, my horses have responded to me in ways I could never have dreamed. You know, like I said, how fast do you want to go? You tell me, we'll go. And it's a great thing. That's a great thing. Instead of saying, okay, let's go. And he's like, well, do I have to go? And, you know, I want him to be part of it. And we just go together. And it just, you know, makes me happy inside anyway.
Yeah.
It's my passion.
Absolutely. I totally get it. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it. And I hope to keep in touch. This has been great.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Karen. She was so much fun to have on. I think I could spend probably a whole day talking to her. If you want to learn more about what she does, be sure to check out the link to her website in the show notes for this episode at earnyourspurs.com/episode34. And don't be shy. If you want to comment on this episode, ask a question, or just reach out to us and let us know how you're enjoying the podcast. You can do so by leaving a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on the comments section for this episode at earnyourspurs.com. You can send us a message on Facebook. Either way, just love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being here and listening in. I so appreciate you, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.